When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, just to let you know, and those who follow me on Twitter will know this already, that I won't be on the pod this week because I ultimately answered the question behind this entire podcast, who got the assist, with the answer I did. Yeah, what I mean by that is that my partner gave birth to our daughter on Sunday, so we had niece the bunny baby, and obviously more important things for once are stopping me from doing the pod this week. I'll hopefully be back next week, and as you can hear, I haven't got my equipment. I'm in the room with my daughter now, but yes, mum and baby are doing very well, and in the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's pod with Nick and Sam, and I'll be back very, very soon. Thanks for all the well wishes on Twitter, by the way. It's really massively appreciated.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Good afternoon. So I'm back and stepping back into the fray in Tom's absence, who's got some amazing personal news as well that he shared on Twitter, that he's had a baby daughter. So massive congratulations to him and his partner. It's been a long while, actually, since I'm on the pod, and it's been an ever-evolving panel of co-hosts recently. It's sort of become like the Great British Bake Off. I'm joined, actually, by the first time with Sam at FPL Pricey. Good to speak to you, Sam. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thanks, Nick. I've had the honour of talking to Tom and Lucy over the last few weeks and months on the pod, so it's great to sort of complete the set, and I finally got to speak to you in person as well. So, yeah, real pleasure to meet you and also to step in Tom's absence again. So massive congratulations to Tom and his partner, as you mentioned. And yeah, looking forward to cracking on with the show and talking about a really important annual subject of ours. As always, we are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FPL. You can find myself, Sam, at FPL Pricey. And you can find Nick at WGTA_Nick, as well as Lucy Hynett at Lucy Hynett with two T's. On the pod today, we're recording at the end of a frantic and exciting game week 30, so can start with a mini league update and then the market forces, along with updates on how we're both personally getting on and how our game weeks went. The main theme this week will be on risk profiles, with a conversation as to how many hits we've taken and what that says about us as FPL managers and also as people in general. We've also gathered a wide range of opinions and case studies from Twitter on that as well. So really interested to hear what all of you've been saying on Twitter around this subject. And then, as always, we'll end with a quick Q&A section at the end of the show. So watch out for that as well.
Super stuff. Brilliant. Thanks, Sam. So let's crack on then and start with the mini league update. Recording at the end of this this game, so we can actually give a proper update, which is fantastic to do. But it's always a bit of a challenge jumping in and trying to say all the names. So we should be lucky with that one. But yeah, top of the league is Mark Bleakley. He holds onto the league with a nice 67 pointer there, up to sort of 2,121 points in total. Very impressive as well. But he's got someone on his tail, though, and that's Arif Mendrieta, who got 69 points, so gains 2 points this week, just 11 points behind, 2,110. In third, it's Sack of Potatoes, Alex Terry, just 57 points for him. And then in fourth, it's the Eternal Flame, Josiah Vezerian. Don't know if I said that right at all. Apologies, 56 points for him. And then in fifth, it's Nats Chapman with Yogurt, 64 points. In sixth, it's at Elevenify, 61 points. And then in seventh, it's Zeeshan Bimani with 69 points. Eighth is Aaron Butler, 55 points. Ninth is Victor Sundell, dropping down a place there, 58 points. And 10th, rounding up the top 10, is Christopher Bateman, 52 points. So well done to all the guys there in the top 10, very close between them all as well, only about 42 points between 10th and 1st there, and all having amazing seasons, making me very, very jealous. Cool. So, well done, guys. As I said, we'll crack on next with the market forces, one of my favourite sections of old times. Always good to come back and do a cheeky market forces update. And yeah, so this game week actually is an interesting one. All about the Manchester City assets. So I think a lot of people did sell a few of the guys, Haaland, kind of a lot of big discussions as to whether to get him in ahead of Southampton. Most people ultimately did get him in because of all the kind of pepping around. It did seem clear he was going to play, he was fit. And yeah, subsequently started, got that brace. If he stayed on the pitch, he might even had a hat trick because there was a penalty. But nice game for Haaland and anyone who brought him in. But unfortunately, some people clearly didn't bring him in because 130,000 additional transfers in have taken place for him. So people who missed out on that brace against Southampton clearly trying to jump back on that Haaland wagon. But he's actually he's not the most transferred in player because that award goes to his teammate, Jack Grealish, who's had 210,000 transfers in, being heavily bought. And yeah, he's on one of his best runs of form since joining Manchester City, really. He's starting to get the goals and the assists. So he picked up a nice goal and an assist against Southampton and also did the same against Liverpool just in game week 29. And he's been picking up the odd return here and there. Definitely seems to be nailed on in terms of that Manchester City starting lineup as well. And I think his price point, I think you can understand why a lot of people bringing him in makes sense, actually, in terms of a transfer.
I feel like just the other week I looked at him and he was down at like 6.6, 6.7. So he must be rising very, very quickly at the moment. And it's clear to see why as well. He is in sensational form at the moment. And I'm sure a lot of people will be very interested in bringing him in over the next few weeks.
He looks like he's on top form. I can understand why he's top of that market forces right now. And also kind of makes sense that so many people bringing him in when it's Marcus Rashford, who's on the other side of the market forces being heavily sold. Unfortunately, he does have an injury at the moment. And it looks like he could be ruled out for a little while. So kind of straight swap there kind of makes a lot of sense, I guess, with 238,000 managers transferring him out. And yeah, I think Shaw and Saliba, the other ones being heavily transferred out, also both with Knox. So Shaw's got a hamstring injury, 223,000 transfers out for him and 100,000 transfers out for Saliba. Interestingly enough, I was a bit surprised to see this. Tyrone Mings being bought heavily. He's the most transferred in defender, fourth on the market forces. Don't tend to see his name prop up too much. 70,000 transfers in for him. And he's just got Ben White actually just behind him in terms of the transfers. So Ben White on his tail. And I can't understand why Ben White's being bought. You know, Arsenal's defense has been pretty solid all season. Kind of makes sense to kind of back them. But the Mings one was a bit of a surprise to me, actually. And I kind of had a quick look. I said, why is so many people bringing in Mings? But I guess they've been pretty solid defensively. 10 clean sheets, Aston Villa this season. Picked up another one against Nottingham Forest. And yeah, about 5-7, actually, in terms of the clean sheets. So Not the most exciting pick to ever bring into FPL teams, but I guess a solid choice if you're selling someone like Shaw or Saliba.
Yeah, I think it's very much a case of who else do you go to at the moment. And with City defenders not proving too reliable, Stones obviously got taken off on the 59th minute this week as well. So a lot of people will be put off of bringing him in ahead of game week 34. Ming seems like the one who's doing the points at the moment. So 4.5, I think he is at the moment. He's a pretty easy buy. And if you're put off the likes of Shaw, Saliba, or maybe even Chilwell at this point, it seems like a quite nice downgrade to free up some budget for weeks ahead. Although I kind of do get the feeling 5 clean sheets and 7 probably isn't that sustainable for a team like Villa. Maybe it carries on, but I'd personally want to have a lot more confidence of the weeks ahead and see that fixture run and feel that the clean sheets are going to continue before I brought in someone like Mings. But he's doing well at the moment and Villa are looking solid at the back. So maybe it does continue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really recommend. I don't think I could go as far as recommending Mings. I mean, I looked at Aston Villa's fixtures. They've had some good fixtures. They've got a tougher run now as well. Newcastle, Brentford, Fulham, United, Wolves, Spurs, Liverpool, Brighton. Looking at that run for the end of the season, I mean, they might pick up a couple of clean sheets, maybe if they're lucky against Wolves or Brentford or Fulham. But the rest of them, they're going to struggle, I think. But they've, you know, they've been performing extremely well under Unai Emery since he joined the club. They're sort of right at the top of the, sort of the form tables. So he's done really well since taking over from Steve Gerrard. So I think I can understand why people are looking at better players, but I think there are better options out there in defence. And you kind of want to be looking at the teams that have the doubles as well. To kind of round up the market forces, also being brought in heavily is Martinelli. He had an excellent game last week against Liverpool, with the goal and the assist, and 130,000 transfers in for him. Obviously, people selling Rashford there, but also people selling James Maddison, who unfortunately in my team's been absolutely terrible. Has done nothing since I got him in, essentially. Really disappointing double game week and disappointing game against Bournemouth as well. So 75,000 people decided to get rid, and kind of makes sense with City up next as well.
Yeah, I think anyone who brought in Maddison can feel extremely unfortunate. There was everything to suggest that he would be a great pick for the last few weeks. I think a lot of people brought him in on wildcard 26 or 27 as well. And I don't think you yourself have wildcarded yet, have you? But I know a lot of people would have brought him in the last few weeks and have had some really miserable luck with him recently. So unfortunately, I think it is probably the right time to sell if you're not too as worried about the likes of Rashford or Shaw and feel like you could probably move Maddison out first.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Maddison would have been high on my sell list. Unfortunately, I've got the issue of Marcus Rashford also to deal with. So I think just because Maddison isn't injured, he might get a reprieve for me. But I think, he would have definitely been one of the first names out team otherwise, considering he's done nothing. It's just been a disappointment.
Who knows? You might get lucky with Leicester against Man City. I feel like I remember them scoring 5 against them the other season. So you never know. Something crazy could happen.
Yeah, they are a bit of a bogey team, actually. I think it's always sort of these Jamie Vardy-type performances back in the day. I don't think Vardy can replicate that anymore, unfortunately. No. But there's been many a time with Vardy's kind of, you know, counter-attacked to success against Manchester City and got some big returns. But I'm not so confident. I can't see it with this current Leicester setup. They're pretty terrible right now, aren't they? Unfortunately. I think it's going to be an easy win for City, that one. But we shall see. Maybe Maddison will get a last minute consolation to knock out that 50 clean sheet, as always.
That wouldn't be the most surprising thing, honestly.
let's hope. We can only hope. Cool. We'll move on to the game week update. So do you want to perhaps start, Sam, in terms of
absolutely.
Your game went and your season as well? How's your season going?
Yeah, so it was quite a frustrating season until the last couple of game weeks. I was hovering around the 200, so like between 100 and 200K pretty much since game week 7 or 8. And then since the World Cup, it was very stop start as well. The bench boost was a big success, so very happy with how that went. And that catapulted me up into, I think it was 80K last week. However, I did find myself in the slightly unfortunate position that I'd sold Ødegaard instead of Saka, which knowingly locked me out of getting Haaland back for Tony. So I had the tricky decision of whether or not to sell Kane for Haaland last week coming into this one. Luckily, I did do it because it gave me a net gain and I wouldn't have captained Kane against Brighton anyway. But it does mean I'm now without Harry Kane, who is in sensational form and up against Bournemouth at home this week. So I finished on 54 points. It was a smallish red arrow. Although my game week rank was around 6.5 million, the red arrow was relatively small. I only went down to about 90K. So I think it was quite a tightly packed crowd this week and everyone finished relatively similar. So yeah, this week I'm mainly just concerned about not having Kane, but generally I'm not too worried about how my game week went, although it probably wasn't the best week ever. How about you?
Yeah, I actually had a rare good week for me, so that was nice. It's been a really poor season overall. I'm sitting around 580k at the moment, so pretty disappointed with everything that's gone on this season. I've taken a few gambles, a few risks here and there. I think one of the most painful ones actually was the week where everyone captained the Brighton player. I actually had Mo Salah and I decided to captain him, and he got me a zero pointer because he missed a penalty that week. And meanwhile, everyone was celebrating their McAllister and their Mitoma returns, and that was really bad. I used the chip finally actually the other week as well, when everyone bench boosted. I free hitted and I got 106 points from it, but it still wasn't enough for a green arrow somehow. So changed. I think I did a last minute change from Watkins to Darwin, which was a big mistake on the free hit. So definitely one to regret there, but trying not to think about the past, something about the present and the future. And then, this game week was good. So 72 points all out. Got the 13 points from Martinelli. That was kind of the big return for me. I've had him actually since game one, never sold him, just held on to this fella. And he's actually turned into a very nice differential at one point. I mean, sort of 97% effective ownership. You think you get zero from this guy, regardless of what he does. But went down to about 26% or something, I think it was. So, really actually start to see the net gains from those kinds of returns. That was kind of the big differential. And then I had kind of the other guys that all kind of returned, but for most people. So I had Kane as well. He got me the 9 points, and Watkins, 7. Haaland's captain, obviously, was the 24 points. And I've kind of got this defence at the moment of just all English right backs. It's kind of sort of harking back to the bigger the back. So James and Trippier both got me 2 points, but Trent kind of got that last minute assist, which also picked him up two bonus, so he went from 0 to 5 in the kind of the last minutes or whatever it was against Arsenal, which is pretty nice.
Do you know what his effective ownership was this week?
Oh, it was tiny. Yeah,
it must have been.
It was like, I think it might have been less than 1%. It showed like a little roll of the dice, as opposed to a star on live FPL. I'm just on it now. So it says 1%. 1%, I think it was.
That is incredible. Can you imagine a world where we'd have seen Trent at 1% this time last year? It's just absolutely balmy. I don't know where that's come from.
Yeah, it's just crazy people like me that seem to be hanging on to like these yesteryears of owning Trent all through the season. It's probably what I've done so poorly, is I could just live in the past and been able to keep up with the present this year, I don't think.
He's going to be a great differential coming for the next few weeks ahead, I think, with game week 34 on the horizon.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll see if people start to jump on him or Mo Salah. I think we're going to talk a little bit about Liverpool later on anyway in the Q&A. That's my game week anyway. As I said, it's not been the best of seasons so far for me, but live and learn. Hopefully just kind of looking forward to next year, really kind of putting an end to this season. But a few more chips in my bank still. I've still got the bench boost to use. I've still actually got my triple captain to use as well. So
you could have some fun with that. That would do well for you.
I've kind of hung on to it a bit too long, I think, but there might be another 37 double game week maybe where I could use it. Maybe Haaland against Chelsea and Brighton to clean up at the end of season. We shall see.
That'll be interesting.
Good stuff. Cool. So as alluded to at the start of the podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about risk profiles. So this is something we've done on an annual basis. Long-term listeners of the pod will be kind of very familiar with this. It's something we like to try and revisit every year, just kind of have a little bit of a discussion in terms of like how many hits you've taken and kind of where that kind of stands you in terms of your risk profile, kind of link it in a little bit with sort of financial markets and things like that, the financial sector, just to kind of throw in a bit of like real life examples, I guess, to the fray. But we put up a little a Twitter post anyway yesterday, just to kind of give kind of, you know, ask the crowd how many hits they've taken in the season and just kind of ask for a little bit of feedback as well. A little bit of social interaction is always fun. And some interesting answers, actually. So it's actually very interesting to compare it as well to last year. So In terms of this year, we've had 500 people kind of sort of vote, but 8.7% said they'd had no hits. 34.3% said 1 to 4 hits. 31.3% said 5 to 8 hits, and 25.7% said 9+ hits. So relatively low actually compared to other years, and it actually shows, like, when we did this last year, we did it earlier as well, so we did it like end of February, but like the amount of hits was so much higher. So it was 24.9% for 0 to 6 hits. 7 to 12 hits was the most, with 37.1%. 13 to 18 hits, 0.6%, and more than 18 hits, 20.4%. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy numbers. And yeah, I was wondering what your thoughts were on this, like, in terms of why do you think we're seeing fewer hits this season compared to sort of previous years?
Yeah, well, it blew me away when I looked back at that poll from last year, and it took me a while to jog my memory as to how crazy last year was in FPL. And when you look at all of the postponements we had around Christmas, and then the double game weeks and the blanks that followed those weeks as well, it kind of reminded me why last year we all went completely hit crazy. Anyone who was able to take under 6 hits all season in that, I think it was nearly a quarter of the crowd were able to resist last year. Props to them. I don't know how they navigated through all of that without any real hits, but I was probably more likely up in the 13+ crowd. But then you compare last season to this season, and I think this season has had its quirks and a few different weird things that have been thrown in. Obviously, the Winter World Cup and the Queen's passing as well made it slightly more complex with the schedule. But generally speaking, there haven't been as many postponements. The double game weeks have been mapped out a little bit further in advance as well, and any postponements also were either across the board or mapped out a little bit further in advance, which made planning ever so slightly easier than usual, or at least slightly easier than last year anyway. And I think it's been a little bit more of your normal season in terms of the hits that you would take. And I think if you'd put this poll up around Christmas time, the average amount of hits might have been around 0 to 2. Whereas now, because we're post-Christmas and we're in that double game week season, we're starting to see a few more flying around, and a lot of people do believe in taking hits around those double game weeks. So now that we're in the midst of that season, and we've just had a patch of quite a few double game weeks over the last few weeks, I think those hit numbers have climbed, but nowhere near the extent of last year. And yeah, if you get a moment, have a look back at last year and have a look back at the schedule, anyone who's listening, and remind yourself just how mad it was, because it was really quite tough to navigate. Whereas this season, a whopping 8.7% not even taking a hit just feels incredible. I don't know how anyone's managed to do that with doubles and blanks still around, but massive well done for planning ahead if you're part of that crowd. But yeah, I don't know what you feel about it, but it feels a little bit more of a standard season. And obviously the Winter World Cup with the extra wild card we all got given, I guess, helped us sort out a few issues there as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It doesn't feel like it's been a normal season. It's still been a very odd season, but with the Winter World Cup thrown in, the Queen's passing, all these kind of unparalleled events that kind of never happened before, we still kind of feel like we're a little bit in crazy town. But I think, you know, compared to the year before where we had constant COVID suspensions, and the year before that as well, like, I can't remember, just, it's been such a long time since we've just had a normal Premier League season where things have just gone normal. I mean, it pays the bills for likes of Ben Krellin, and who's got his master spreadsheets and has all his different machinations. But you know, for us FPL managers, it has been a little bit of a minefield. But I think, yeah, you are right in terms of this season. Perhaps I didn't feel like it had, but perhaps it has been a little bit calmer. Everything's kind of been a bit more scheduled. Everything's kind of a bit more structured. We've also had that additional wild card or unlimited transfers, whatever it was, that kind of helped a lot, I think, over the winter period to kind of get people to kind of rebuild their teams if they needed to. And yeah, people have kind of had their chip strategy perhaps a little bit more defined and a bit more clearer. than other years where people were kind of free hitting and wild carding all over the place to a certain degree. And also, I think this year it's a bit different in terms of like the teams and the price structure. So I think last season it was really hard to get everyone you needed within your team because there were so many premiums doing really well. We had Son and Kane at Spurs, who were very, very expensive, both doing excellently well. We had Trent and Salah at Liverpool, and Mane as well, actually, even. And then you had the City guys, Kevin De Bruyne and others, all also kind of knocking on the door, trying to get them into your teams. And you're trying to fit them all in was a real struggle last year. And I think this year, it's just the best players have just been a lot cheaper. So it's been, you know, there's been Haaland, who's been a set and forget, but like the Liverpool assets have never really made a case for being in our team this year. So we haven't needed to worry about how much they cost and fitting them in. You know, you've had Kane as well, but you've had these kind of steady Eddie players. They're actually very, very affordable. Like some Rashford's dirt cheap, started the season 6.5, and he's kind of been a set and forget all season. And you've had Saka as well. He was only 8 million, very, very cheap at the start of the season. Martinelli was only 6 million. And even like some of these other people kind of merged, you know, Odegaard or Almiron earlier on in the season, Mitoma later on in the season, very, very cheap, you know, haven't needed to kind of pull apart teams to get these guys in. So I think kind of makes sense, I guess, that people aren't taking hits. You know, if you started off well, you got those guys in at the start of the season, you know, Trippier since game week one, there's another player that you wouldn't have needed to sell. You could have just had him sitting there all season. Then there's not been that kind of real need, I think, this year to take hits. And that perhaps explains why this season we're seeing, you know, many, many more kind of what we call cautious managers, as in they're just kind of sitting with their teams, they're happy, they're comfortable, they don't need to make changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the whole player factor really plays into it as well. And what to a point you mentioned earlier, I didn't mean that there's been no chaos this season. Obviously there's been a lot of chaos. It's more about the fact I feel like the chaos has been almost orchestrated to a point where anything got pushed down the road far enough that we could actually plan. So we knew the World Cup was coming, obviously, and then we got the wild card to help sort our teams out from there so we could plan around that a bit. And as shocking as the Queen's passing was, the postponements affected everyone. And then the doubles were planned out, mapped out months in advance still. So we were still able to maneuver our sides over quite a few game weeks rather than last season. I think there were games that just dropped like flies hours before or even minutes before the deadline. And everyone was just wildly taking hits at any given moment. 5-10 minutes before the deadline, just because you didn't know whether a game was even going ahead. So to that extent, it's calmed down a little bit, but I completely agree. I'd love to see a normal in quotes FPL season next season and get back to our regular standard viewing for a little bit.
I think, yeah, as FPL managers, we love the drama, really. You know, all the chaos and confusion it brings adds an additional element to the game, for sure. But yeah, it can add a bit of randomness as well, which isn't always best when you're trying to you know, beat the odds, I suppose. But cool, no, that's good discussion. So yeah, we'll crack on and talk about the different risk models. So I think to start off, we're going to talk about the managers that have taken 0-4 hits. So we refer to these managers as cautious risk takers. So these are kind of FPL managers that perhaps approach the game very patiently with their moves. They might hold on to wild cards a bit later. They might kind of have that relatively template team, the key assets, you know, Captain Haaland week in, week out, just solid picks at the back. No need to change the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper's fine all season. And in kind of real life, these are kind of people, perhaps investors, who maybe just keep their money safely tucked away in their current account or in an interest savings account, just earning a little bit of money here and there, or maybe a cash ISA, just no risks, no frills approach to life and to FPL as well. And yeah, it works out for a lot of these managers as well, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got a couple of case studies that we've taken from Twitter and from a couple of good sources of ours as well. So we'll start with Tom, who I think you'll all be very aware of. He's only taken 2 hits this season, which I can't believe, but he's taken what appears to be quite a different perspective on FPL this season, really tried to save the hits where possible and seen it as a 4-point handicap each week. So I think it is working out relatively well for him, I think he would say. I think he's up in the top 5K or there or thereabouts at the moment. So it seems for him the hitless approach is paying dividends. And obviously, the way he's been looking at it on the show all season was talking about how it's equivalent to a forwards goal or an extra defensive clean sheet. So when you put it in those terms, it is really quite valuable, each 4-point hit you take, and trying to regain that off of one or two transfers is quite a tricky thing to do without the help of a double game week, which FPL Sports Science, Sam from Inspected Goals, also makes a good point on, that he also has been taking very few. He falls into this category of very few hits. And generally, and I know this from his appearances on Inspector Goals as well, he tends to talk about them as massively overrated in a single game week, where it's quite hard to pay them back off of one fixture. But then also they're underrated in his view from double game weeks as well. So he finds them much easier to pay back when the players you're bringing in have two opportunities to regain that extra goal or that extra clean sheet. So very interesting points of view. I know Tom in the past has been a lot more hit happy and has taken this new perspective this season, and it really seems to be paying dividends. Interested to hear your thoughts on that, Nick.
Yeah, I think, as I said, this is something that, like, it's surprising to see that Tom's been doing, because he's usually the guy who kind of falls into that kind of aggressive risk taker strategy, taking lots of hits, taking lots of punts here and there. But I think this season, he's actually, you know, he's done so much better this season. I mean, obviously, since we started doing the pod, I've been the one who's done well and he's the one who struggled. So definitely shoes on the other foot this season. He's done excellently well, and he's kind of gone for that cautious strategy, I suppose. Just kind of like looked at his team week in, week out, and thought, actually, I don't need to take too many risks. I've got the right players. I'm happy with who I have. And, you know, when you kind of look at it that way as well. So, for instance, if you're changing one of your forwards, do you see that the player you're selling, like, since it's Watkins or something, is Ivan Toney, say it's Ivan Toney you're replacing with, is he actually going to outscore him by a whole goal? The odds aren't in your favour in that case. Like, it's this you're very much playing against you're playing against the bookies when you try and say, actually, I'm convinced that my player will actually score more than one goal than the other player. Like, you know, so that is the kind of the gamble you have to take with a hit. You're kind of playing against the odds each time. And I think that makes sense as well in terms of the clean sheets, as well as the other example from the defenders. It is a risk to take hits, and you really are kind of chasing against the pack when you do it. So I understand why, you know, a lot of managers kind of avoid this kind of hit strategy and actually say, is it really worth it? No, I don't see the value. I don't see it worth it. And especially if you're doing well as well. And that's what I've noticed as well. Some of the guys at the top, you'll see it's every year, actually, the sort of guys right at the top have taken very few hits. So I can see, like, for instance, the number one in the world right now, Ivan Kampko, he's only taken one hit all the way to game week 24. He's taken a few since then, actually, but I think to go all the way to game week 24 with just the one hit was very impressive. And same for the person in second place, Mashari S, has just taken two hits all season. So, you know, I think, you know, obviously this season as well, as I alluded to earlier, with the players that kind of are performing, there's not been that real need to take the hits. You haven't really needed to kind of tear your team apart to get Mo Salah in, or tear your team apart to get Kevin De Bruyne in, or whoever it is. There's been solid picks like Haaland and Kane. You just set and forget and stick with them all season, and you do very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the past as well, in previous seasons, injuries have really played a big part in why we start taking hits all of a sudden. And this season, even when an injury has struck at some point, especially in the first half of the season, most of us had the likes of Andres Pereira on the bench, who we were more than happy to play and avoid taking the hit because the odds were against beating Andres Pereira by 4 points in any given week. Whereas the second half of the season, the doubles have started coming in. I think the odds were slightly against him in that case. But yeah, it's really interesting to see how well the minimal hits are doing this season in particular. A couple of other examples out there as well, Mitchell Sterling and Gier as well, all fall into that category. And I believe they're all doing really well as well. So congratulations to all of you. And hopefully your minimal hit strategy keeps paying off.
Yeah, well done, guys. That's it. As I keep saying, all very jealous.
Yeah.
So, there's a next category to talk about here is the kind of the moderate risk taker, actually. And this is where we both fall into. So these are managers that have taken sort of 5 to 8 hits over the course of the season. That's about 20 to 32 points burned over the course of the season. So these are kind of managers that are more willing to take a gamble. They're not as cautious as some of the managers we talked about just now. They do take a risk here and there, you know, so comparison with real life would be perhaps people that have sort of money locked away. They're going to do a bit of investing, you know, a bit of experimentation with the open market, but, you know, not too risky in terms of their investment strategy. They might go for kind of FTSE 100 tracker mutual funds or maybe share investments here and there, but don't go too wild with all their cash and kind of just start throwing it on the open market like some of the risk takers we might refer to a little bit later on in the pod. But yeah, as I said, few of us fall into this category. I've taken 7 hits myself this season, and there has been that requirement, I think, in my team to kind of do a little bit of surgery, especially having not used my second wild card. And it's not really paid off. I actually think I could have taken more hits and been more successful, or taken more risks. And there's been times where I haven't taken a hit and I regretted it and missed opportunity to get on certain players. Examples might be for me personally would be Toma at Brighton. I feel like I missed a lot of points from him, and also Almiron earlier on in the season. So I think when you are chasing in the game, and I've been chasing a little bit, there is the appetite perhaps to take a little bit more risk, and, you know, not just sitting on the fence a little bit can be the wrong strategy. And I think I've learned a few lessons from that as well this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot to be said for the kind of the nothing to lose part of the game. This is a free game at the end of the day, and if you're chasing rank and you're not happy with it, but at the same time you wouldn't mind so much if you ended up even further down the leaderboard than you are now, then a hit in theory is probably a no risk call, because you don't really have anything to lose in the first place. So chasing those punts, and we'll come into that a little bit later on with the higher risk strategies as well. But I can certainly see in cases where you're chasing rank or chasing a mini league leader, for instance, going into the back few weeks, which I'm sure a lot of us will be doing in the next 6 to 7 game weeks, hits will become a tool in our armory to try and twist a little bit and try and gain an advantage. So yeah, hits are definitely not this evil thing that we need to avoid doing. They have a use in the game, and when you're chasing rank, like you mentioned yourself, they can certainly be of use. I'm at 5 hits this season, so I've also tried to implement a bit of a strategy like our co-host Tom as well, not as successfully as him, and I think my planning has gotten the best of me. Sometimes I've almost overthought things and tried to get ahead of the game slightly too much and ended up having to fix fires elsewhere. But 5 hits for me at this stage is relatively low. I think most of them have either been chasing double game week players or 1 or 2 injuries in there as well. We've also got another few examples from the community as well. So Farron Collins has taken 5. They, again, usually have taken more by this stage of the season, but trying to be more patient, a bit like myself. And they've actually still got the wildcard bench boost and free hit left. So really interested to see how that strategy pays off. It's incredible that they've only had to take 5 hits and haven't used the second wildcard yet, considering all the doubles that have been a part of the game over the last few weeks. That's very impressive. So interested to keep track of that team and see how they rise the ranks over the next few. Johan Savage as well, 6 hits for themselves. Sees himself as risk averse. Same with Jeremy, 6 hits for them. And most of them have come in the last 4 or 6 game weeks when there's been double game weeks as well. So like I was mentioning earlier, those double game weeks seem like an opportunity to twist a little bit, jump on some form players or jump on double game week players that you think could help you gain an advantage over others.
Super stuff. Cool. So we'll move on to sort of the aggressive risk takers. So as I said, these are managers that kind of take a lot more kind of gambles with their FPL team, a lot more risks. These kind of managers that kind of take 9 to 14 hits in terms of this category as 36 to 56 points burned over the course of the season. So yeah, managers that likely to gamble on differentials, willing to take a lot more risks on players and just seeking that high reward all the time. So perhaps this might fall into kind of captain choices as well, less likely just to go with the auto captain Haaland and maybe take a few gambles with other players, even like Salah or De Bruyne or Kane or whoever it is, you know, some of the Arsenal players, Rashford, etc. But just not Haaland, anyone but Haaland, because that's boring. That's not risk taking. And yeah, less patience as well for these managers. So if they see a player in their team and they blanked maybe even two games a week, that means they're out. Get rid of them straight away. Move to the next player. And yeah, just don't stick with anyone that's not performing. And in real life, these are managers perhaps, you know, much more willing to kind of take bigger gambles in the stock markets and share markets. They might put punts on unknown smaller stocks, might kind of go into kind of crypto and things like that as well. Just not sticking with the kind of the normal boring markets and yeah, taking a lot more risks.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a few good examples from the community again. So Alan Kelly seems to feel a little bit jealous of those in the risk averse category. So they're on 13 hits so far this season, which is at the upper end of this scale. And he seems a little bit jealous that 1 to 4 hits is the pole leader. So maybe they were aiming to be more risk averse, but weren't able to do so. Who knows, maybe injuries got in the way, or maybe chasing rank also is a factor there. FPL Kudos as well, 9 currently. A lot of them were -8s, actually. So I think 6 of them were 3 times -8s. Again, I can only assume that that would probably be around doubles in the back end of the season so far. And FPL Tickle as well, 9 hits for them, including, and I quote, an infamous -12 for triple Liverpool. I think a lot of us understand where that came from a few weeks ago. I think I took my -8 that week too. So big hits were flying around then. And I think they brought in Tarkowski as well, all of whom were then sold on the game week 26 wildcard for them. Again, I can heavily relate to a lot of those issues. Then a few other hits. So Bethany Morgan, 13 hits, fewer than previously. So it seems that she might have been in the extreme risk taker category before, which we're going to come on to. And trying to be a little bit more patient now and weigh them up individually. So will X player score 4+ points on player Y that they're taking out, and really try to weigh up that decision-making process that we mentioned earlier based on that extra goal that you need, that extra clean sheet or assist that you might need, and trying to bring that down a little bit. -8 this week for them. To bring in Haaland, or including Haaland captaincy. So the most recent one seems to have paid off. And I think when you've got a positive relationship with hits, like it seems Bethany has here, it's much more tempting to then almost double down the following week or roll that dice again, because you've got those good memories of hits that you've taken working out. And maybe you get that little bit of an adrenaline kick when something you've punted on goes your way. You've got those bragging rights in the pub. You've got the bragging rights around the water cooler at work. You've picked someone that no one else has got. And there is a lot to be said about that element of FPL that we all find probably the most exciting part of FPL. Picking that player that no one else has got. And I think when you fall into one of these more heavily weighted risk categories, that's when those kind of types of FPL managers come out a little bit more. And that kind of side of the game also plays into our thinking. And it's something that I definitely relate to and have related to in the past. Not so sure it correlates with a high rank season in, season out, but I certainly see the top end, like the top 10 in any given FPL season, tend not to have necessarily been there ever before. So taking hits and picking players that no one else has thought of, jumping on those waves before anyone else does, can catapult you above the average good FPL manager. So I can certainly see why these kind of risk categories work out.
Yeah, definitely. I think you made a good point there about when you have a successful hits strategy and it pays off for you, it does kind of lead you on to taking more hits. And I found as well in the past as well, like when I performed poorly after taking hits, it makes me very much hits averse. So I think kind of your success rate kind of evolves your strategy to a certain extent. So like if you have a run of really good successful hits, you continue to take them, and it's almost like, you know, being down in the casino and you keep making money. When you're making money, you want to gamble more and more and more. But if you're losing money, you kind of just say that's it, you know, go home. And eventually, unfortunately, I think the casinos, the casino always wins, and that might be the case sometimes with some of these hits. But certainly when you're on a run and it's working out for you, then can understand the kind of the mindset there. But as I said earlier, you are going against the bookies. But I think especially like with seasons in the past, sometimes when you've got these kind of scenarios where like there's blanks and doubles and stuff, that kind of throws a whole different element to the game as well, and can be a winning strategy to take lots of gambles and lots of hits. And I can see that certainly with some of these managers here, it feels like there's a bit of regret from some of them in terms of the amount of hits they're taking, which is interesting. But others, etc., was kind of saying, actually, you know, they do see the value of taking the hits and have had a lot of success from them as well. So I certainly can see that it is a successful strategy. Whilst we look at the people at the top, some of them have taken very few hits. You can actually see a few out there that have taken lots of hits as well. So it's we're not saying that taking no hits is the only strategy. I think there is definitely credence in kind of like the gambling strategy and taking some of those extreme risks as well, especially when you get a differential win that no one else has. So for instance, Trent this week, as I said, under 1% ownership, mental kind of numbers. If you get someone like him in a hit and he actually gets one of his sort of famous sort of 18 pointers or something, that can really catapult you up the ranks. So there's definite benefits to the kind of the gambling and the differential strategy as well. And ultimately, as you said, you know, when you want to play against them all, it does make the game a lot more exciting as well, because it can get very template and boring otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah. A little bit of raging against the machine sometimes never hurt anyone.
Exactly. Cool. So yeah, just kind of to move on to the final sort of category, and that's the extreme risk takers. So we've kind of been talking a little bit about extreme risk takers anyway in the last category, but these are managers that have taken 15 plus hits, 60 plus points burns. That's, you know, that's a lot of points when you start looking at in terms of like what rank you'd be if you'd have 60 plus points in your team. But these are managers ultimately willing to gamble frequently. They might have, well, this is the other advantage of taking lots of hits, is they might have a very high transfer value due to sort of catching early price rises. So that's one benefit that can pay off as well later on in the season. You can afford a more expensive team because you've been getting on those players ahead of the price rises and getting rid of your players before they fall. And I think in real life, you know, these are people who have sort of nothing's off limits in terms of what they're going to invest in. It could be obscure cryptocurrencies, hedge their bets and take shorts and leverage positions just in an attempt to win big or be down the casino, as I said, kind of gambling their money away to try and make lots of money. Obviously, we're not saying that every extreme risk taker in FPL will actually be gambling their real life money. It's a very, very different scenario, but this is kind of just an example of what, you know, extreme risk taker in real life might be up to. There's a few case studies as well here, just a couple of people actually, isn't there?
Yeah, so the two that we're highlighting now from the comments on the poll were General Zod with 15 hits, so that's 60 points of hits so far. They say it's mostly been Kane and Salah shuffling, which is really interesting because we mentioned earlier on that we haven't had such a premium struggle this season. But when you think about it, if we've got Haaland in anyway, and you're trying to fit that second premium in, if you find yourself at a little bit of a crossroads between Salah and Kane, Well, every time you want to switch between the two, that is two moves. That's two transfers that you have to take in any given game week. So if you've been shuffling them about more than a few times, then the hits will start to build. And yeah, I can certainly see why the hits have climbed over the season so far if you're moving between the two quite a lot. And I imagine that's probably going to continue happening between now and the end of the season, because Salah's got double game weeks to come. Kane's obviously still got a couple of good fixtures left before most of us will be moving off. And that, again, will be two transfers once again ready and waiting to go. And then the other example we've got is Kai Red 123. Takes a lot of hits, probably 20, they think. So that would be up at 80 points worth of hits so far this season. And they tend to look at it over a 5-fixture period, which is really interesting because that is a good way of trying to figure out whether a hit would pay off. So if you're taking a -4 hit 1 week, the examples we've been using obviously are, will they pay off an extra clean sheet or an extra goal in that week? But actually, most times we're looking at them over a stretch of 5, maybe even 10 game weeks at a time sometimes to try and figure out, is this player actually going to be more 4 points more valuable than the player I'm taking out over a stretch of games, if I'm willing to keep them for that many games? So I think 5 fixtures is quite a good sample size to measure that over. Although one example for me earlier this season was probably removing Martinelli for Saka at some inanimate point in the season. And I think even without a hit, it hasn't paid off, let alone with a hit over 5+ game weeks. So it doesn't always work out, but it is an interesting and quite a clever way of weighing up a hit if you're playing it out over a longer period of time rather than just trusting it to pay back over 1 week. Although they do say, considering the fact there are 20 hits so far this season, they're at 400k so far, so it's not so bad. And it really does go to show that there are different ways of playing this game that can still be successful, and you can still ride those waves with hits taken into account.
Yeah, exactly. I think we've kind of come to that sort of conclusion, really, haven't we? That, you know, there are multiple ways to play the game. We're not saying any strategy is the worst strategy. I think, you know, there are a lot of values in taking hits, especially when you've got kind of these strange fixture schedules and we've got kind of players dropping in and out of form. And it's not just about, you are right, it's not just about the next game week. It's kind of looking ahead as well, fixture shifts, etc. I mean, I never condone a hit for a sideways move, sort of an Arsenal Saka to Martinelli. I know there was a lot of kind of who's going to start with Trossard joining the club, and a lot of people as well were convinced that Nketiah would be nailed in that number nine position, at least until Jesus was back. So kind of a lot of controversy there, and I'm probably one of the only people that seemed to keep Martinelli, perhaps just because I wasn't properly focused on what everyone else was talking about. It paid off for me in the long run. But yeah, no, really interesting strategy from some of those guys. I think the Kane and Salah shuffling point is a good one as well, something I'm actually weighing up myself, whether I'm going to have to take another hit just to get Salah in for the 32 game week. And yeah, I think, you know, whilst we've probably all kept Haaland, I think Kane has been in and out of our teams a little bit more, maybe. And Mo Salah, certainly we've all kind of flirted with him a little bit this season, perhaps not kept him in for very much longer. And it would have been interesting, actually, say Salah was having another one of his sort of worldy seasons where he looks set to kind of get, you know, close to 300 points again in terms of FPL score. Maybe the hit number would have been a lot higher if we had to all have Salah all season, we had to all have Haaland all season, and we were trying to fit in Kane however desperately we could. I think perhaps we'd be looking at like a completely different poll there if the Liverpool players had delivered to their potential, whilst we've been quite lucky this season that a lot of the campaign we've been tripled up with Arsenal, and they've all been extremely affordable. And And FPL Towers made the crazy decision of dropping Rashford for 3 million compared to last season, where he was 9.5 million and he was extremely affordable. I think next season should be very interesting, actually, in that regard, because I was thinking about what the price of Saka would be. Surely he's got to be double figures. Rashford, surely he's got to be double figures. We're going to start having this scenario again. We were like, how do we get these guys in? And then you kind of get these managers that are looking at their teams as well, and they're like, get itchy trigger feet if Saka doesn't score one week and Rashford does score the next. And you know, I think next season we'll definitely kind of perhaps we'll see a trend back to more hits, or maybe we won't, if it is a normal season, as we say, and then there's no more crazy suspendments and postponements and everything that kind of we've seen this season and the past few. Yeah, definitely going to be interesting to continue to monitor over the course of next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I look forward to a normal, unquote, season. But what is normal anymore? I think we're all used to double game weeks and blanks every other week now anyway. So maybe that's the new normal that we were all hearing so much about all those years ago when COVID hit.
Yeah, the new normal of lots of hits in FPL. That's how we're impacted anyway in real life. Cool. Well, I hope everyone found that interesting. We're going to wrap up now, I think, with some quick fire. Just got a few questions to answer, and then we'll move on to captains and transfers as well to finish up the pod. So the first question actually is from Jeff Pedder, who's asked us for Rashford replacements that aren't Jack Grealish. So what are your thoughts there?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, we've got a fairly strict pool of players to pick from now because of the double game weeks to come. And a lot of us are on quite set strategies with free hits and 32, for example. So there's only 5 or 6 teams that we're really looking at the moment. But if you're willing to look outside the box a little bit more, and it's incredible to say that this is looking outside the box, but most of us won't be looking at bringing another Arsenal midfielder back in because they don't have another double to come and we're all free hitting in 32 anyway. However, Martinelli, or if you've already got Martinelli, the likes of Odegaard or Saka are all performing extremely well week in, week out. And despite the fact they don't have double game weeks, they're still the ones picking up the double digit hauls most weeks. So I wouldn't mind going back to another Arsenal midfielder if you could get to it, or if you are at the moment not too worried about missing out on an extra double game week player in 34. Outside of that, if you really want to look at something very differential, then Olise, obviously at Crystal Palace, hat-trick of assists last week. And there is an element of the players just done the points, so look at this guy. But Roy does seem to be getting them to play some more expansive football. They've got some great fixtures between now and the end of the season as well. So if you want to chase rank a little bit with a bit of a differential punt, then maybe Olise could be an answer out there. You can also look at other Man City mids too. So the likes of Gundogan as well could be of interest. Or of course, if you've got the budget to or have a route to get rid of Rashford and then move up to the likes of Salah, which is something I'm looking at over the next few weeks as well, even for a -4 this week, that could be an interesting route to take. The one thing I would say about Rashford is at the moment, we don't really have that much information on how long he's going to be out for. And if you're one of the managers like myself, free hitting in game week 32, we only really need to worry about him in 2 weeks. And that's in 31 and 33. As long as he's back by 34, we'll all be very happy to still own him by then. So it's, can you bench him for those 2 weeks? And then just sacrifice, if you've got a second Brighton mid that's sat on the bench for this week against Chelsea, I'd probably be fairly comfortable playing them instead and just leaving Rashford on the bench. And then after game week 32 as well, I think they go up against Tottenham. So if he's injured for that still, is it the worst thing in the world to just bench him again? A lot of us have just bench boosted, so have strong 15s. Can you afford to keep him on your bench for a couple of weeks and then have him back if he's going to be fit by game week 34 and we get that information? I don't know. I mean, that could be an option that I'm looking at but it depends what sort of news we get from Ten Hag midweek ahead of the Europa League clash. If he's out for the season, then we're going to have to move. And personally, from my point of view, I would be very tempted to try and free up funds elsewhere to get Salah in early.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, actually. I think it's come at an inopportune moment, really, because he's got kind of, especially if you're free hitting in 32, he's got an excellent run of this sort of Everton at home. Well, obviously, they just played Everton home. They got Forest away and then Spurs and then that really nice double of Aston Villa and Brighton. And yeah, I did actually look and I thought, are there any alternatives at Manchester United? And I wasn't sure really with Bruno. It's kind of the same price as Anthony and Sancho, but they would, you know, that's really kind of gambling at this point, isn't it? I mean, Sancho's just managed 4 goals and Anthony, I think he's not scored since game week 10 in the Premier League, which is pretty shocking. So I wasn't really sure about those guys, to be honest. I think you can look at some of the other City assets. As you said, you mentioned Gundogan. Foden's out at the moment, maybe Mahrez is sort of another alternative pick, but you know there is that kind of worry constantly about the minutes there as well. And then yeah, if Liverpool, as you said, if you can kind of afford Salah or kind of make some changes to get the money to get Salah in, obviously he would be like the perfect person to kind of fit in. But other options in midfield, the only other option I suppose would be Gakpo. But I think there's rotation risk there as well. Mm-hmm. So perhaps.
And Diaz is back for this weekend, apparently.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Diaz as well. So you've got Diaz, you've got Jota, Darwin, Gakpo, all kind of competing for two slots ultimately in that team. And Bobby Firmino actually as well. So, yeah, it's really, really tight for spaces in that starting 11. So perhaps not really a good pick. So it's a tough one because we're trying to like come up with a good answer here, and it's like really struggling to come up with one. And I think you made a good point about the Arsenal players. Of course, you know, doesn't really work for the guys that are going to free hit in 32, because you want to be looking at the teams that are doubling in 34. That, you know, Arsenal, if you're not free hitting in 32, brilliant to get an Arsenal player in, because they've got a really nice home match against Southampton in that week. So kind of really works in terms of tripling up, getting back on Martinelli, getting back on Odegaard. So kind of from my own strategy, I'm already tripled up in Arsenal, but I was also looking at Crystal Palace because they've also got quite a nice home match against Everton. And yeah, Elise is the one to perhaps look at there. I was actually watching that game with an eye on the Crystal Palace assets, thinking, oh, maybe I'll get one of these guys in and see how they do. I watched the first 40 minutes of the game and I thought, I'm no chance of getting any of these players in. They're absolutely rubbish. Leeds are like all over them. I actually ended up not watching the rest of the game. I switched it off. So I had stuff to get on with. And then looked at the final score. I was like, what happened here? It ended up being 5-1. So I was like, when I turned it off, it was just all Leeds. Leeds were on the attack constantly. Like Sam Johnston kept Palace in the game. And yeah, I was just a bit shocked to kind of see that they'd managed 4 in the second half, but 5 in total. Pretty crazy that. But yeah, I think at least it would be an interesting punt there. But otherwise, yeah, in terms of the Rashford replacements, you can go very cheap. You can look at Brighton or Newcastle assets, or you can just hang on to him and hope that he's fit for that double game week in 34 and maybe play one of your cheaper defenders. As you said, work towards that sort of Salah strategy. And that kind of leans us on, I think, quite well to the next question, actually, which is about Liverpool. And that's from James Carroll, who said, is Salah or are any of the Liverpool assets, for that matter, worth ripping up our teams for?
Yeah, so as I mentioned just now, there is a strategy that could open up for me that would be a -4 to get to Salah early. I think I've kind of driven myself down a route that would mean that I'm going to get Salah in game week 34, almost whatever happens, barring any injuries. I'm pretty convinced that he is a player that I will want by game week 34, and they've got great fixtures either side of that as well. So I'm very happy to move towards Salah quickly. It's whether or not Rashford is out all the way past game week 34 and we get confirmation of that this week that would would make the difference between me diving on him now or trying to have two free transfers in the bank ahead of game week 34 and then moving towards him then. I wouldn't say he's worth ripping up your team for now. I think it's one of those moves that can probably wait until we get to the double or very close to the double at least, and then we can assess the lay of the land. I think realistically, I realize most people haven't done what I've done and got rid of Kane yet, and probably rightfully so. He's got Bournemouth at home, probably a very good hold for right now. And if you've got Kane at the moment, he's probably your cash cow that would enable Salah eventually. You don't want to be getting rid of Kane ahead of Bournemouth at home. So I would say the answer to this question for the immediate term is probably no, it's not worth ripping up your team to get to Salah or any Liverpool player right now. But definitely have an eye on them after that game week 32 free hit for any of you who are free hitting. And anyone who's not free hitting in game week 32, then getting on them slightly earlier, perhaps even this week, might be an option. Certainly by game week 32, you want to be looking at Salah if you're not on a free hit, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. I think it does depend a little bit on your chip strategy. I think Liverpool actually are in a very unique position of having a game week 32 game, and they've got a double in 34. So if you have no chips at all, you've used them all, then it kind of makes sense actually to target Liverpool, because you've got coverage for your 32 and you've also got coverage for the double in 34. So it kind of makes sense in terms of a strategy there. I think, you know, you're right in terms of Salah and ripping up your team. You don't want to rip your team up. You know, they kind of lost a bit of their pizzazz this year, haven't they, Liverpool? And Salah's even lost the ability to convert penalties now. And you wonder if he's going to be taken off him. I mean, that penalty was terrible, the one against Arsenal. So I don't think there's kind of enough of a case to kind of really start making intensive surgery. But saying that, I think there will start to be a bit of FOMO, especially when you start seeing everyone with their free hits in 32 whip him in, because presumably everyone's going to have him in for 32 free hit. Kind of makes logical sense for that home match against Forest and the City Bank. And then game week 34 as well, it'll be interesting, but I imagine a lot of people start to want to get him in for that double game week as well and find a way to slot him in. And I'm sure it's going to be possible, especially with the likes of Kane probably being an obvious fall guy in terms of freeing up cash for most managers. So I can see in 32, 34, most managers will have him in there. And in terms of my own sort of strategy, that's what I'm worried about. I'm going to be wildcarding in 33 and I'll probably be getting him in for that double game week and bench boost. But it's just about how I get him in 32. And I think there are a few options there in terms of freeing up the cash, but it actually involves selling Haaland for me. So it's just about kind of doing that move then, and then obviously having the wild cards to fund it and get Haaland back in 33. So I think most managers are going to be looking to try and get him in for 32, but you just have to kind of assess it a little bit, just assess it cleverly in terms of your own chip strategy, how that's going to work. But don't take too many risks. I think in terms of the rest of Liverpool assets, ripping up your teams again, with Trent, I happen to have him, unlike most managers, and I'm probably going to hang on to him as well, just because he's quite an interesting differential, I think, for the next couple. But, you know, they've been massively overpriced this season, considering what they've actually delivered. And I don't think they've really shown the form that it's worth considering them. I think Van Dijk seems very much off the pace. Robertson spending too much time arguing with linesmen, should concentrate on his football, as Roy Keane says. And I don't think there's much of a case for any of the other Liverpool players, really. And we talked a little bit about, I mentioned Gakpo earlier, but the rotation with Firmino and Jota and Darwin and Diaz all fitting into two slots there is going to be a bit tricky for managers to really consider. And none of those players have really shown the proper form over the course of this season either. So I think it really is kind of more of a Salah or bust, I think, in the short term. But obviously, I think for free managers on free hits, they're probably loading up on the players in 32. So that that's just your risk, whether you're willing to accept that if you don't have your free hit on 32.
Yeah, exactly. And I think outside of Salah, there's just no trust there for the rest of the other two of the front three. I'm quite glad, actually, as well, because I was worried Darwin would be more of an option that than he probably will be. And now, with so much rotation threat in there, I don't think many people are going to risk going for him. So I'm quite thankful for that. I can avoid the Darwin problem altogether.
Yeah, exactly. He's completely off the case, I think, at the moment, isn't he? Yeah, no, that's cool. So, yeah, we've got another question here from Jeremy, and this is about, he said he's got a similar chip strategy to me in terms of he still has his wild cards, he's still got his bench boost, and he's got his free hit left. So what should he do to sort of forge ahead of the masses?
Well, I think you mentioned earlier your wildcard plan is 33. And I think that makes a lot of sense if you've got a bench boost as well. You will front load the bench boost into 34. Obviously, plenty of good doubles there. I know a lot of the stronger teams play, but you can probably still fill out a really decent bench boost in 34 with some budget players as well, even if not all of them necessarily double. And then free hit as well is a really interesting one. I think there's another relatively okay double coming in 37 that you could put the free hit on there. And obviously with only 1 week to go in the season, then you can kind of have a big last hurrah, having a look at what the template is at that time. If you want to chase rank, you can just zig when everyone else is zagging. And like I said earlier, it's not really losing anything if you're already chasing the rank and you don't mind falling further. So you can just jump on every player that no one else has got at that point and try and regain some rank there. Or obviously you could free hit in game week 32 if you like. But I think if you've already got the wild card left, you can probably avoid the free hit in 32 and dead end that week and then wild card out of whatever issues you get yourself into after game week 32, and then use those three chips in the back few double game weeks and see if you can regain some rank there. Because at the end of the day, the double game weeks are the ones with the most variance, the most potential for big points. So if you really want to forge ahead of the masses in the last few weeks, going differential or trying to get an advantage on people would be better off in those big weeks.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think I don't have my free hit actually, so I am planning on dead ending into 32, and then the wild card in 33 seems the optimum strategy to kind of fill it up with as many double game weekers as possible for 34 to use my bench boost and hopefully start to gain a bit of overall rank back. So I think you can get your triple City very easily, maybe even your triple Manchester United, triple Liverpool. Brighton have a reasonable double as well, so you might even triple up with them, and then you've just got West Ham and Fulham are the only other teams with doubles, and they're okay doubles. Fulham's double's pretty terrible actually, so you might not even bother with any double game weekers there, maybe a goalkeeper if you really fancy the gamble. But other than that, you can get a pretty solid bench boost team for 34 with, you know, maybe 12 or so double game weekers. And yeah, that's interesting actually in terms of what you said about if you do have your free hit, not to bother free hitting in 32. It depends on your setup ultimately, but if you can field 11 men and you're comfortable with those 11 men for 32, then it might not be worth free hitting, but instead focus on maybe using your free hit for one of those final double game weeks. Game week 37 might be one in 36, I don't know. This fixtures haven't been officially announced, but likes Newcastle still have a double as well, and Brighton look like they've got loads of doubles, so Brighton seem to be a team that you want to triple up on at the end of the season to kind of go for it. And I've actually got my triple captain as well, so I'll be using my triple captain in one of those double game weekers right at the end of the season, and hoping it gives me a cheeky little boost just to kind of end the season on something of a high note. But I think at this stage of the season, you just have to be careful to make sure you do come up with that chip strategy plan, because you don't want to get to kind of another couple game weeks and not actually have planned it out and find that you end up wasting the chip. So definitely the right moment now to make sure your kind of plan is in proper motion for the end of the season and you stick to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with so few game weeks left now and the doubles are pretty much mapped out as well as the blanks, now is the time to sit down and plan out that chip strategy if you haven't already, which I'm sure most of you listening to this show are engaged FPL managers. You probably have a decent idea of where you want to go. But if you haven't already, then sit down, pen and paper this week and map it out for the weeks to come. It's one of my favourite parts of the season, mapping those things out. So yeah, it's good fun. So enjoy if you haven't already.
Good stuff. And the final question to wrap us up is from FPL Goop. So he's asked us, how do I get out of an overall rank rut? So between game week 22 to 30, he's pivoted between 479k to 477k, with highs of 378k and lows of 587k. So yeah, he's basically not really changed his rank at all in those sort of 8 game weeks. You know, very little rank movement. What do you think about this? How do you kind of get out that rut?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, and it's something I've struggled with this season as well. I mentioned at the top of the show, probably since like game week 7 or 8, I was kind of hovering between the 200 to 100k mark. It's one step forward, two steps back, then two steps forward, one step back all season. And I didn't really know what I was doing right or wrong. I wasn't really going anywhere. There was a couple of really good weeks, a couple of really bad weeks, and it would just sort of hover. And I think the best way I can summarize this from my point of view is just keep playing the game the way that you genuinely believe is going to get you the most points week in, week out, whether or not it's differential or still very template. Play the game that you think is going to get you the most points each week. And from that, it might be for a while quite frustrating and you might end up hovering for a while and it might feel like you're kind of in quicksand. But eventually, if you keep making those right decisions, the results will pay dividends and you'll get out of that rut. I think sometimes, in myself included, you get in that bit of a rut, you get a bit bored and you might pick a differential captain that you don't really believe is going to be the best captain that week. Or you might take a hit that really in your heart, you don't think is going to actually pay off. You're just doing it to live a little and to be a bit different and to try and get out and force something out of the rut. But realistically, the only thing we should be doing at any given moment, maybe barring the last couple of game weeks, is trying to maximize our points each week. And overall, that is a strategy that will get you to rise out of that rut eventually, in my view. Obviously, with the asterisk that if you've got 1 or 2 weeks to go and you kind of need to get on with it, you need to do it now or never, then maybe a differential pick is then the way to go to try and risk it all. But in my view, play the game your way that you genuinely believe is going to make the most points, maximize those points each week. And eventually you will naturally get out of that rut, as frustrating as it is for the time you're in it, which it really can be quite annoying and quite boring, but you will get out of it eventually, in my view.
Yeah, I think that's sound advice. Ultimately, you know, we could say start taking more risks, go for more differential captains, take more gambles. But, you know, I don't think necessarily, as we kind of alluded to throughout the whole podcast, that's not always going to pay off for you. And I think it is very frustrating to kind of stay stationary in terms of the game week ranks, yo-yoing about too much progress, kind of going up and down. We've certainly all been there before. But I think it's just one of those seasons where there have been a few obvious picks that we've all kind of had in our teams. And that has meant that, you know, progress, unless you had a great start, kind of getting back into sort of the top 100K for most managers, it's been very, very painful, very slow progress. And yeah, you know, I think there are options out there. You can go against the grain. You can not captain Haaland, for instance, and maybe opt for a differential Captain Salah or Captain KDB or whatever. And I've done a bit of that myself this season. As I said, you know, earlier on in the pod when I said I captained Salah, that game week where he missed a penalty. If he actually scored that penalty, it would have been a massive swing in terms of 18 points. And those kind of split decisions really can sting you. But when you know everyone else has a different captain and you're essentially going against everyone else, the swings are much more larger. And I think certainly this season, especially when it comes to the captaincy, kind of going against Haaland has been heartbreak for any manager that's even attempted it. So I think you have to kind of, I think you made some really good points to Sam about just kind of like sticking with what you think is going to score you the most points week in, week out. Focus on your game. Just don't worry about what's going on in other managers, but just focus on what you think is going to be best for your team. And eventually you will see some form of progress and gain.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
Super stuff. So yeah, wrapping up there then, I guess, with our captains and transfers. So for me, as I said, it's got to be Haaland captain. I'm not going to mess around with it. It's Leicester at home, you know. There are other picks. So you could fancy Kane against Bournemouth at home. I'm sure he'll probably score in that one. Manchester United at Forest, but with Rashford out, not really a pick there, is there? And Arsenal, you could go for an Arsenal player, maybe West Ham away, Saka or Martinelli. I don't know. It's excuse me. It's one obvious pick for me. It's Haaland, and I think we're going to see ridiculous numbers again in terms of the effective ownership. I think we got a bit lucky this game with those who captained him, because the effective ownership was nice and low for a change. So it was only about 125% or something. So I think this season is going to be, this game week is very much going to be back to the, oh, he's a captain, he scored, but it's done nothing to your overall rank, unfortunately. But in terms of the transfers, alluded to this a little bit earlier, there's a couple of options here. One is downgrading Rashford to the likes of Elise, maybe, getting him in for the Southampton game, Everton, and then to wildcard in 33. But the other option actually would be to just roll and just bench Rashford and play Andreas and kind of go for a hitless strategy there, where I have a two free transfers to sell Rashford and Haaland. And getting Salah and someone like Solanke or someone just to fill up the numbers, and therefore avoid kind of a hit. Because I could still do that the following week anyway if I did sort of Rashford to Elise and then Madison to Salah and Haaland to Solanke. So I could do that again, but that would require me taking a hit, and I just don't know if I don't know if it's worth it for just this week. And you're kind of going back to our earlier point, it's like, do I see Elise outscoring Pereira by 4 points, which would be the gamble I'd have to take? I'm not convinced enough, despite his hat trick of assists, that Elise can do that. So we shall see if I'm wrong or not, and hope that Pereira does well against Everton away. So that's not too bad a fixture either.
Yeah, Pereira at Everton away is not a bad game at all. Everton, I think, shipped 3 or 4 XG away at United. So Fulham can certainly carve out chances still. And Pereira is as likely as anyone, I guess, to bury something for Fulham right now with Mitro out. So, yeah, I think keeping Pereira wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Cool. And so what's your plan then for your captains and your transfers?
Yeah, I'm similar to you in terms of the captaincy. Unless something really weird happens in midweek with Haaland, it will be on him. I think even if he only got 60 minutes against Leicester, that is more than enough for him to do some pretty severe damage to that back line. And we could be looking at 2 or 3 goals again. The ownership will be extremely high. So going back to a couple of the points earlier, like, can you differentiate and try and gain rank that way, I'd say this is probably not the week to be betting against Haaland at home to Leicester. I think he is the clear standout pick, even on reduced minutes. There are other interesting options out there, but I think they're all kind of dwarfed by Haaland's brilliance at the moment. So I wouldn't be brave enough to go against that. My transfers, I do need to make a move this week because I'm free hitting in 32 and I don't want to effectively burn a transfer this week. I want to move towards a situation where I come out of 32 in a better position, closer to the team I want to get to for 34. But I've got Rashford to potentially think about. Luke Shaw, we might get some news on. I'm hoping and banking on the fact he'll be back by game week 34. But if we get news that either of them are out for a significant amount of time that leaves them unlikely to make that double game week, then I will probably have to move them out now. Likewise, I've got Chilwell, who I'm a little bit concerned about, and he's a bit of a cash cow now for me. I could downgrade him. Or if Rashford is confirmed out for a while, as I hinted at earlier in the pod, I could potentially look at downgrading Tony to Greenwood at 4.0 and upgrading Rashford immediately to Salah and getting him in whilst his effective ownership is still low, and hoping that he hauls for me in the meantime before we get to game week 34. And then perhaps Rashford becomes fit by game week 34 and I can bring him in for the likes of Saka then instead. So it's kind of reversing the moves I would have naturally made anyway. But yeah, I think I'm going to have to wait for team news midweek. We'll get a good sense of the Man United players' fitness because they've got Europa League on Thursday. So hopefully we get a headline from Rashford or Shaw. But until then, it's all very much up in the air, unfortunately. I think if I was to bet on anything right now, it would probably be removing Chilwell and downgrading that position slightly to either burning the spot with a 4.0 or sub 4.0 defender, or perhaps having a look around at a Crystal Palace defender. Aston Villa, obviously, Mings is performing well, but I don't know if I trust them to continue keeping clean sheets. So yeah, I need to do some thinking, and I'm hoping team news will clear up my mindset going into Saturday's deadline.
Sounds good. Still early days, isn't it, in terms of those decisions? Always quite tricky to kind of go on the pod and say, this is what I'm going to do on a Monday when you've got kind of four or five days still to go. No, that was brilliant, Sam. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it, as always. And it was a great pleasure to actually get to talk to you for the first time as well. So thanks very much for having me. As always, we were Who Got the Assist. You can find the Who Got the Assist Twitter account and Tom's personal Twitter account at WGTA_FPL. You can find myself, Sam, at FPL Pricey, and you can find Nick at WGTA_Nick, and Lucy Hynett at Lucy Hynett with two T's.
Brilliant. Yeah. Thanks all. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week, potentially back to normal service in terms of the regular co-host, but that will be confirmed in due course. But in the meantime, we hope this has assisted you. Cheers, guys.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.